So today is April 24th. And we'll skip what should be the next section. To study the Buddha way is to study the self. To study oneself is to forget the self. And that section ends with the traces of enlightenment come to an end, and this traceless enlightenment is continued endlessly. So I gave a talk on that famous passage in November, and it is on the Palouse Zen Group's blog, if you'd like to listen to it. Today I'll take up the section immediately following the forgetting the self paragraph. And it reads like this. When a person starts to search out the Dharma, she separates herself far from the Dharma. When the Dharma has already been rightly transmitted in oneself, just then one is one's original self. If a person, when she is riding along in a boat, looks around and sees the shore, she mistakenly thinks the bank is moving. But if he looks directly at the boat, he discovers that it is the boat that is moving along. Likewise, with confused thoughts about body and mind, holding to discrimination of the myriad dharmas, one mistakenly thinks his own mind and nature are permanent. If intimately engaged in daily activities, one returns to right here, the principle that the myriad dharmas have no self is clear. So again, these first two sentences are rather straightforward. Because you are not separate from the Dharma, because the Dharma is a seamless whole to search, and especially to search outside yourself, immediately creates a disconnection. However, this searching seems to be one of the woven threads that makes us human. This searching is not unique to we moderns. All cultures seem to have tales of a long journey searching for gold, diamonds, the opposite sex, the soul, whatever was valued in that culture. The searcher, hero, or adventurer goes through all types of travails and after many miles and years returns to where she started from and finds what has always been present. The young Zhao Zhou's journey was shortened because on meeting his first teacher, he immediately asked, "What is the Tao?" Nan Chuan said, "Ordinary mind is the Tao." Clearly, if it is ordinary, no running about and searching is necessary. Just open your eyes. Just taste with your tongue. Just to make sure of this point, Zhao Zhou followed up with, "Should I try to direct myself toward it?" He still thinks it is outside, and he insists, since he is human, on searching for it. Nan Chuan said, "If you try to direct yourself, if you try to search for it, you betray your own practice, which means you betray your own life." Nan Chuan is not saying you do not have to practice, but he is insisting that our sense of practice has to be reimagined. We have to realize we are simply looking to see what has never been hidden. When you practice Zazen, you are not an object. Mu is not an object. Breath counting is not an object. There is no object, and in fact, there is no activity. There is only, as Dogen says in his Fukan Zazenji, sitting at the gate of ease and joy. There is only sitting with nowhere to go and with nothing to do. There is only sitting with nothing to depend on. There is only sitting, allowing each thing to come forward and confirm you. And as you become porous and your edges more diffuse, the Venus star will put on your shoes. Kuan Yin comes down from the altar and puts on your rakusu, and the sound of the bell will fill your seat. Then, and just then, one is one's original self, containing and contained, multidimensional, multi-centered. Dogen next writes, if a person, when she is riding along in a boat, looks around and sees the shore, she mistakenly thinks that the bank is moving. But if she looks directly at the boat, she discovers that it is the boat that is moving along. Likewise, with confused thoughts about body and mind, holding to discrimination of the myriad dharmas, one mistakenly thinks her own mind and nature are permanent. It may be that in the prime of our physical lives, say in our late teens or 20s, and into our early mid-30s, we may think the shore is moving, but the boat, the body, strong, dependable, and stable. However, that myth is easily seen through if your glasses are handy as we age. It is clear that in our 50s and 60s and out beyond, that the boat is thinning or thickening. It is clear that it has sprung leaks and the holes are widening each year. The boat creaks and cracks and twists, and the water it sits in, life, intrudes, and we are more easily unmoored by wind, cold, rain, and waves. If we ever did, now, at this older age, we rarely think the body is permanent and solid. However, we may still think that there is something or someone which exists throughout our lives. We can remember experiences from our youth and through the arc of our lives. There is a narrator who seems always to be present, and we wonder if the driver or the pilot of the boat might be the one. But with Zazen, we see ourselves take so many positions and tell so many stories that we begin to see through that myth of a solid, dependable narrator or self. But then there's another, even more subtle story that we begin to adhere to, especially we educated postmodern Americans. We say, There is no thing permanent or abiding. And right there we create a new story with a quieter, possibly little wiser narrator, but narrator nonetheless. Many of us have fallen away from or seen through the Judeo-Christian monotheistic myth, and we are not depending or planning on heaven or 33 Vestal Virgins. We have been raised with an awareness of processes and can intellectually see ourselves as simply that. I have heard folks say life is a process and death only a part of that process. And this may be true, but there is sometimes a lack of emotional truth or integrity when this statement is made. It is too much from the head, and the same old narrator remains. This is the beauty of Zazen. If we sit with honesty and integrity, we can't get away with such statements. For who is making them? And who is nodding in agreement or disagreement? When you become quiet in Zazen, who is there? Who? Remember, even the witness that softly reports of pure awareness or just presence or just this is still a vestige of ego. That quietest of voices, the almost silent voice, which is called the wise one in some traditions, or the spirit in others, is usually the whisperings of ego. The one who makes deep psychological statements of insight or discerns spiritual nuances is often the ego directing and inserting itself. Be careful, be aware, and return to your breath. Return to counting. Return to mu. You do not have to cut off the whisperings any more than you have to cut off the whisperings of bare tree branches in a cold winter wind. Those are simply the conditions of your Zazen. Just like the valleys, mountains, and creek crossings are the conditions a backpacker finds herself in. There is no need to grasp at phenomena and no need to push them away. Let them do what they do. Whisper, whisper, whisper. And at some point, they will stop. And at some point, they will continue. In another fascicule from the Shobo Genzo titled Zenkei, or Total Manifest Function, Dogen writes, "Life is just like a person riding in a boat. In this boat, I raise the sails, and I row with the oar. Although I row the boat, the boat gives me a ride, and without the boat, I could not ride. Yet, I ride in the boat, and my riding makes the boat what it is. Investigate and thoroughly inquire a moment such as this. At this very moment, there is nothing but the world of the boat. The sky, the water, and the shore are all are the boat's world. all other circumstances and activities of the boat, which is not the same as a world that is not the boat's. When I ride in the boat, my body and mind and the environs together are all essential parts of the boat. The entire earth and the vast sky are essential parts of the boat. Thus, life is nothing but I, nothing but life. When our thoughts are confused, which means when we believe in an independent, substantial, and permanent self or soul, we may know things change, but we doubt that we do. However, in Zazen, as we continually see the rising and falling of sounds and smells, the rising and falling of tightness and relaxation, of contraction and expansion, we experience all life as me and me as all life. There is no separation. What occurs inside occurs outside, and what occurs outside occurs inside. When we stand, the world stands, and when the world sits, we sit. We soon recognize in Zazen that my body is the body of the world, and we don't worry quite so much. We know that things move together, and this moving together has no beginning, no middle, and no ending. This does not mean that we don't feel confused and lonely at times. This does not mean we don't feel sad and grief-stricken or unhappy and afraid at times. It just means that sometimes there are bright clouds. It just means that sometimes there are somber clouds. It just means that sometimes we sit and sometimes we stand. Sometimes we cry, and sometimes we laugh. And sometimes we pick and choose, and sometimes we don't. Actually, to say we experience all life as me, and me as all life, isn't accurate. That statement is too general, and life is not general. Life is particular and specific. So it is more accurate and true to say, as Dogen does, that when intimately engaged in daily activities, one returns to right here. And the principle that the myriad dharmas have no self is clear. If intimately engaged in daily activities, again, not in general, but specifically, when intimately engaged in sweeping, in bowing, in chopping, in chanting, we return to right here. We come home to the place that we actually never left. When intimately engaged, the unguarded boundaries that keep us apart drop away. You and I drop away and it is clear that each has no separate self. And because we are intimately engaged, we are able to fall in love again for the first time. We fall in love with ourselves for all that we are and for all we can never be. We fall in love with our troubles, with our travails. We fall in love with our loneliness and with our suffering. And we fall in love with the world for all its terrible beauty and for all its heartbreaks. We fall in love for all its life and death. We fall in love for all its sunrises and sunsets, and for all its hope and hopelessness. If intimately engaged, I'm reminded of a stanza from a poem called My Field Guide that I read some little while ago. The poet Aaron Ballou says, "I've never bothered with the names of flowers, though now I'd like this expertise to call them out to you as we hike in. But I would want their true names, not the guide's all-classifying explanations. I would want their true names, and I'd have the words that droning bee has just now written at the throat of lakeside goldenrod." The bee is intimately engaged, the goldenrod intimately engaged, the poet engaged. She knows the name of the flower, but she does not let this hold her back from experiencing in a different way, a more subtle way, a more engaged way. She is participating in the unfolding life and not being stuck to shore or boat, to body or soul. She is willing to know and then let go of that knowing, using the knowing as an entranceway to that which is always right before us. Our knowing is not a problem. The knowing is not a block. It is the entranceway. It is the invitation to now see and hear more clearly. It is a starting point to step into what we can never completely know, but that we can love again and again and again, always for the very first time. Okay, thank you.